Welcome to, Isabella, welcome to our first Zoom podcast recording. We started strong in person, episode one, and now we're doing it through the magic of technology, episode two. Who knows how we'll do episode three? Now, maybe a oil painting, or, you know, like those sketch pads they use in courts. Where?
That would be amazing, actually. I'd really like to see you do that.
I'm a terrible drawer, so... You're a much better drawer. You could be the court artist.
To give it a go.
I'm not sure it would capture the audio nature of the podcast as well.
Yeah.
So we'll maybe put a pin in it for later down the line. So we're just we're settling in with our home comforts, I suppose. I've got my tea on the go. I've actually got some tea from Macintosh at the Willow with me. I've got some Cloud Catcher tea. Which is one of our fruity teas, actually. And the reason I picked it is because it always seems, I don't know, it's first of all, it's cheerful. I think it's a cheerful tea because it's like apple and coconut and kiwi. Nice bright colours in your cup. I think that coconut just makes me dream of faraway places.
Well, to match your coconut theme, it is the Essence of Paris wax melts.
Lovely, right. So I think we should make a proper start to our podcast. So welcome, everybody, to episode two of Time for Tea 1903, the Macintosh at the Willow podcast. I am joined, as always, so far by the lovely Isabella Scott. And today we will be enjoying her... prowess, her art history prowess, because we are going to be talking about the outside of the building, the design of the outside of the building. It seems fitting because we're in lockdown, so we're not actually allowed in the building. The building is literally locked to us. So that narrowed down the things that we could talk about, really. So I thought it would be a great time just to really focus on the exterior, because it's an iconic exterior. It really stands out on Sucky Hall Street. There's just nothing like it around it. And I think in 1903, it's hard to even fathom how shocked those like late Victorians and early Edwardians would have been when the cladding came off and they saw Macintosh's white facade and all the Art Nouveau details. So we'll be talking about that later on in the podcast. But I thought before we did that, it might be quite nice to set the scene a little bit by having a wee think about the buildings that we're missing. So I thought, Isabella, is there a Glaswegian building, doesn't have to be a famous one, that you are missing because you're not walking to work at the moment?
I like walking past the CCA because it's got all the little sort of Alexander Greek Thompson sort of like floral designs on it. And things like, you know, the little wonky clock in Charing Cross. I know that a lot of people have it on their sort of maps for touring the city, but I miss that fella. Other than that, it would be the Kelvin Grove, but I'm trying to walk, if I, you know, when I go out on a daily walk, walking past the Kelvin Grove, just hoping to be back inside its doors at some point soon.
Yeah, I think we're quite spoiled for choice, really, in Glasgow. There's so much incredible architecture from all sorts of periods.
What's your favourite?
Aside from Macintosh at the Willow, aside from the Macintosh building. One of the buildings that I glimpse on my way to work is the Hat Rack. Have you ever been to the Hat Rack or seen the Hat Rack?
No.
So the Hat Rack, that's not its proper name. Its proper name is St. Vincent's Chambers. And it's another Art Nouveau building. So Macintosh Art Nouveau, and then this one is by an architect called James Salmon II.
That is such a title.
Isn't that great? And what's even better about James Salmon II is that apparently he was known affectionately as Wee Troot.
No, he wasn't.
Yeah. Because I guess, you know, his dad, Salmon I, was Mr. Salmon. And so somewhere along the line, James Salmon, the architect, got this this nickname, Wee Troot. Yeah. So he did the Hat Rack, and it's a lovely building. It's called the Hat Rack, I think, because it's got these finials, you know, like metal bits at the top, and they look like you could hang your hats on.
In Blindswood Square is the first place that there was like the Association for Women Artists, and Macintosh actually designed the doorstep. I thought that was cool.
Yeah, yeah. And later on in the podcast, I'll certainly be talking a wee bit about the area just outside Macintosh at the Willow that you can reach within 5 minutes of the building, and some of the architectural treasures that kind of, again, are hidden in plain sight around us. So, you know, if you're coming to Glasgow for the day, you can come up to Macintosh at the Willow, and you can spend, you know, half an hour and clock 3 or 4 amazing pieces of architecture before you come and have your lunch. Let's crack on with narrowing our focus right down to the outside of Macintosh at the Willow. Isabella, should we talk a little bit about what Stocky Hall Street was like in 1903? Because it's so different now than it was when Macintosh opened the tea rooms. It is fascinating, I think, the changes. But in 1903, if you stood on Stocky Hall Street, you would have been on like one of the most fashionable streets in Glasgow, if not Scotland, really. You know, you had all these high-end department stores, and it was the place to come to get your shopping, but like your high class shopping, like your furs and your gloves and your hats and things like that. And it was cobbled, and the tram would come up and down there. So you'd ring the bell, get off the tram, and then you'd be ready to go into Macintosh at the Willow, or the original Willowteriums as it was called. I think it was an ideal spot really for Miss Cranston's tea room, her fourth tea room, because of the bustling high end nature of Stocky Hall Street. So Isabella, if you were perhaps heading out with your gal pals, you wouldn't have been called gal pals then, but you know, with your gal pals to get a new stole, or you know, some new fur, like a fur coat, you would perhaps come into the city, go into Daly's department store. And actually, the Willow Tea Rooms was part of Daly's department store for a while in its history. So you'd go into Daly's and you'd be like, you'd have such good service. That's what they say. Like Daly's, you just got great service.
It's an experience.
All the people who worked there called each other, you know, Mr. Ramsey and Miss Armstrong and stuff like that. And someone was telling me that they'd heard that if you were buying gloves, for example, which I think lots of people are during the winter at the moment, I've certainly bought a new pair of gloves recently. You'd go to their glove department and you would, you know, you'd rest your elbow up on the counter and like display your hand. And then the assistant would slide a glove over your hand and then you could model it and have a real good look at it. And then the assistant would take your glove off for you and then find you another one. So it was,
I guess, people would still be used to getting, like, people would still be used to other people dressing them in a lot of ways or helping them with corsetry. So this would have been quite normal. But if someone tried to put a glove on me in the middle of like Topshop or something, I'd be like, no.
And it's, I think we've lost quite a lot of the nice architecture, to be honest. You know, there were some absolutely cracking department stores on the corners of where we are that you know, a minute from Miss Cranston's, you could go into Pettigrew and Stevens, which Macintosh helped design. So he designed like a dome on the top, the cupola on top. And then, you know, we've talked about Daly's, but Copland and Nye was a really famous Glasgow department store. It had a restaurant and tea rooms and a band that played every evening when you'd go into the restaurant. I imagine it's probably not the band like we get in Nice and Sleazy's down Stocky Hall Street.
Howling Wolf.
Band, but like a really classy place. In fact, I think Copland and Lye had those pneumatic tubes, you know, for cash.
The ones that, like, you can send them to different floors by shooting them up in a little...
That's right.
That's so Willy Wonka for me, like, every time I see those.
Yeah, so I think... So if you were a middle-class lady coming into the city to get that kind of shopping experience, Miss Cranston's was perfect to come, and after you've got all your bags and your gloves and your furs and stuff, you could come in and maybe have lunch in the Salon Deluxe, like I say, with your gal pals. But also for men as well, it was a shopping kind of mecca. There was a company called Reed and Todd's, and they were famous for doing like canes and umbrellas and travel luggage, you know, because the Victorians were out exploring the world and, you know, they had to, like Phileas Fogg, they had to be dressed properly. So you could go to Reed and Todd's and get your travel gear, and then you could come into the billiard room as a gentleman and, you know, show off your wares, talk a bit of shop up there. So it's really different. The other main thing I suppose I wanted to describe is the fact that although all of that was lovely, Glasgow was, you know, turn of the century, Glasgow Industrial Revolution, it was filthy. It was really dirty. So you maybe had your lovely clothes on and you were shopping for new clothes, but as soon as you stepped onto Tucky Hall Street, all that smog would be coming at you.
And
noisy, you know. We certainly know that McIntosh probably made hay out of that. He took advantage of the fact that before you came into the tea rooms, it was dirty and grimy. I think he wanted the tea room experience to be so unlike that, so that when you stepped inside, it was clean and bright and full of natural shapes, just very unlike the street that you just left. It was almost like a psychological trick. Yeah,
100%. I was wondering if women, were coming out to shop, would they actually be allowed to? Would they be allowed to come out by themselves? Would they have to? Would they have to be with their gal pals, or so that they're chaperoned in some way?
It's a good question, and difficult to answer. Certainly, I've looked at some period photographs, and there are women by themselves, and then there are women with other women, and there are women accompanied by men. So it's, for me, as a sort of a non-specialist in that time period, difficult for me to say. But I think you're right, things were changing anyway. Mm-hmm. And as we'll probably talk about later, especially when we do a special episode on the Salon Deluxe, Miss Cranston's had such a good reputation for being respectable that certainly women could come here by themselves.
Yeah, 100%. She was a Glasgow character and everyone kind of like looked to her.
Isabella, do you want to maybe talk a little bit about the Art Nouveau influence or the Japanese influence on the exteriors?
Yeah, of course. So the building itself is completely whitewashed. He chose to finish it in a white painted render. And that meant that it really contrasted the other buildings around it. He pared it back so there was no sort of really overly ornamental features. So it kind of took on the core values of Japanese art in a really big way. So you've got those neutral tones, and then you've got the kind of natural flowing forms and whiplash lines of Art Nouveau. You've got a Scottish baronial aspect, because McIntosh is really keen on making sure that this building was a Scottish take on Art Nouveau.
Just kind of honing in on that idea of like design philosophy and embracing that Japanese philosophy. If you're a Victorian, the way that you kind of treated someone well was you would perhaps, you know, plonk them on a big mahogany chair that would be really ornately carved, and the material would be expensive, and there would be like chintz garnish, heaviness. You know, you kind of, you showed respect to someone by surrounding them by wealth. And that's really in contrast to this Japanese idea about welcoming someone to a space, you know, 100%. Making them feel comfortable, harmonious. And the building, I think the exterior of the building really does have a sense of harmony and peacefulness about it. Definitely. Partly because
it doesn't bombard you. It's just, it is what it is. And it has some really sort of core key design values, which are meant to sort of soothe you and invite you in. For example, the ground floor is pushed back slightly. So you feel like you are entering that other world or oasis, as you were talking about before. It's like a tasteful composition, and it's supposed to be timeless and immaculate. And I think that that is one of the things that people still appreciate about the external features of McIntosh at the Willow.
Yeah, absolutely. And later in the podcast series, we'll maybe focus in even more on the interesting relationship between Japan and Glasgow. Mm-hmm. I know there's been a lot of academic work done on it, and it's really fascinating, like, to learn about how these Japanese ideas ended up in Scotland, you know, through trade, but also through the Clyde and the shipbuilding. That's, you know, that was kind of the main kind of source for all these Japanese ideas and Japanese people to come up, and the kind of cross-pollination of cultures between the two very different places. There's a lovely piece of metalwork on the outside that I always think, you know, ticks off that Scottish design box. You know, we've got the Japanese colours and philosophy, and we've got the European Art Nouveau, but, you know, for your Scottish injection, McIntosh obviously gave us those leaded glass, that baronial, those baronial windows that Isabella talking about. But Isabella, do you want to say something about the the sign that hangs outside the tea room?
The two signs that sort of flank it?
Yeah.
Yeah. They're cool, actually. They've got... they have the reference to the willow, so they have a little deconstructed willow design on the front. But my favourite part about them is that they have birds that are three... There's three little iron-cast birds that sit on the top to look as if they're flying out, which is very... It's cool because it's very Art Nouveau. It's got those kind of flowing curved lines. There's no sharp edges. And then they have a little bell at the bottom. But they're beautiful. And then you've got that kind of typical Macintosh writing as well.
So yeah, the birds and the bell and the tree is 3 out of 4, isn't it, for some of you? So for those of you who aren't in Glasgow, or those of you who are in Glasgow, but perhaps... this is new information for you. Glasgow's patron saint is St Mungo, or St Kentigern is his proper name, but St Mungo, everyone calls him St Mungo. He is the Bishop of Glasgow, and if you've been down to the cathedral, the amazing cathedral, I think he's buried in the cathedral. I think his tomb is there. But you don't even have to go down to the cathedral to get your dose of St Mungo, because the city embraced his 4 miracles as their sort of icons, which is kind of cool. So I think you could probably just catch a bus and they have them on the bus stand. You know, it must be so confusing for people who visit the city and don't know, but they're like, why is there a fish and a bell and a tree on this bus stop?
They do seem quite random. I did a quiz for my family the other day, and one of them was, one of the questions was based on Glasgow, and I said, you know, what are the 4 elements? And my sister attended Glasgow University, so she got them straight away. But everyone else was like, they didn't know. So just to kind of like logically break it down, it was like, well, maybe it'll be a crown, or it'll be, you know, something. But none of them got any of the elements at all. And I was like, I totally understand that, because you'd think it'd be like, I don't know, like maybe a lion or a unicorn or something. But
yeah, it's funny, isn't it? Like, you know, for example, the fish, but Glasgow's not a coastal place. Yeah. The forest, but we're not in woodland. The bell, we're not famous for our bell. We're not like Notre Dame and Hunchback of Notre Dame.
Exactly. It's a strange.
Yeah, but there is a perfectly reasonable answer, and it's that the patron saint of Glasgow, St Mungo, that he allegedly performed 4 miracles represented by these images. And there's a wee poem about it, which I always get in the wrong order. But
I've got the poem here if you want me to read it in the right order. Here is the bird that never flew. Here is the tree that never grew. Here is the bell that never rang. Here is the fish that never swam.
So yeah, 3 out of 4 of those are Macintosh seems to have woven into the ironwork on the outside of Macintosh and the willow. Potentially a 4th. Isabel, I think she spotted the 4th, the fish, somewhere in the building.
Well, I've seen, like, just on the front, as part of the ironwork, there's some sort of slightly curvy forms that could make up a fish. There's a little bit that curves to the left, almost like a fish's tail, and then there's some white painting.
Do you want to hear my personal explanation?
Yes, go on.
I think that Charles Ray McIntosh liked to enjoy lunch in the billiard room with his dear friend and fellow architect, Ye Treat, James Salmon II. Because they were contemporaries. So I think that's how the fish is incorporated into the building. I think James Salmon II would have his lunch there every day.
Ergo. Were they pals? Yeah, but were they pals?
Yeah, they went to the... Well, I don't know if they were pals, but they were contemporaries. They went to the art school together and they worked reasonably the same time. And they both
were artists. I'll accept it.
Yeah. So it's a beautiful... It is a beautiful building from the outside, and it's really, I think it's eye-catching. You know, we, even on quite a dreary day, people stop and stare, and on a sunny day, you know, we sometimes just, if I look out the window, the office window, sometimes I see someone with a camera there just taking a wee snap of the building. So I think it's sort of aged really well, hasn't it? Like it has.
It went through a stage where Art Nouveau wasn't very fashionable, because it just wasn't. Everyone was like, that's been and gone and done and we're sick of it. And then I think it's kind of come back as more of a classic, sort of timeless building.
Totally. So when the Willow Tea Rooms Trust, which is the umbrella organisation that looks after the building, when they purchased 217 Sophie Hall Street, the Willow Tea Rooms, they also made the canny decision to buy 215 Sophie Hall Street, so next door, and combine the two buildings. Isabella, from your point of view, from like events and the building management, can you maybe explain to people what the advantages of having 215 Suffolk Hill Street are and how we use it?
Yeah. 215 is awesome because it's, I mean, the addition of 215 to the modern renovation has a very specific purpose. The main purpose is that we wanted to put in a lift. So, and we couldn't do that with the historic building for obvious reasons. It's meant that we have a lot of extra space to do additional things within the building. So we can use the space really lucratively for learning and education, business meetings. And it just means that, you know, different facets of Glasgow can use the building again for even more.
As Isabella said, like the retail store is in 215. So yeah. That lovely tea that I was drinking at the beginning of the podcast, the Cloud Catcher, and Isabella's Essence of Iris melts. You can just buy them from there, can't you?
It's so weird. It's
such a seamless plug there.
Such a coincidence.
And Essence of Iris, obviously made up in Harris, inspired by the landscapes of Harris. Really, you know, everyone in the staff seems to buy all the Harris stuff before the tourists can come and buy it anyway. having 215 Suffolk Hill Street means we've got this space to support local crafters and local artists with their products as well. So, you know, remaining on our topic of being around Suffolk Hill Street and not being able to go into the buildings, but you can still get your like culture hit. There are some lovely buildings within a 2-minute walk of Mackintosh at the Willow that are worth visiting. For example, the GFT, the Glasgow Film Theatre. Isabella, have you ever been to the GFT?
I love the GFT. I have. I've been, well, not as much as I'd want to. Pinnacle, beautiful.
So the GFT, the Glasgow Film Theatre, is a sort of Art Deco building. They do lots of European films and independent films and then stroll
up. It's a brilliant part of the city.
And then also up that end of the city, near us, we've got Tenement House, which is a great little museum. Have you ever been to Tenement House, Isabella?
I haven't.
So Tenement House is a tenement. It's a tenement flat. It's run by the National Trust Scotland. Mm-hmm. And it's Glasgow Tenement. Inside, it's been preserved by the woman who lived there for a very long time. She, all of her objects and furniture and stuff is still in there. So it's like going back in time for like an experience in Glasgow, you know, over like half a century. So if you were coming to Glasgow up this end of town, you could do 2 time traveling trips. You could come into Mackintosh and Willow to get your turn of the century, and then you could just walk 2 minutes down the street to Tenement House and see how Glaswegians lived and all the things they used. If you're interested in churches, St Aloysius Church is up there as well, and that's an amazing church. It's got a tower, it's got some bells, which I recently learned were secondhand from St Giles in Edinburgh. So
oh gosh.
They've come across. I think St Giles had 10 bells and they tried to flog them to make some money. And that area used to be like Jesuits and stuff. So it's really interesting in terms of ecclesiastical tourism. St Aloysius is...
Ecclesiastical. I love that word.
Ecclesiastical.
I'm so sad.
Great. So we have kind of finished our main focus of the podcast, which was the exteriors of the building and the exteriors of stuff around us. It is now that special time, Isabella, where we go back in time. It's time for 1903. Last podcast, we visited the Tour de France. And we visited the Crayola factory. You remember?
We did. I know. And I vividly
you tried
remember.
To guess the colours.
That was a quite traumatic time for me.
As I'm sure Crayola totally intended it to be, the crayons to prompt trauma.
Exactly.
So this week I thought, because we've had this incredible blizzard, it's been so cold and then deadly icy, I thought it'd be fun for us to maybe have a wee chat or ponder about if we were late Victorians or early Edwardians, 1903, how we would be keeping warm in these, if we were locked out and looking at these exteriors. How do people stay warm in the cold in 1903?
You know.
So tell us, Isabella, what do you know about this? About
staying warm in 1903 or just 1903 fashion in general? Because I won't lie to you, I did a lot of research and then I got carried away. Things that would keep you warm would be furs and muffs, which is, you know, well, which are big furry hand warmers.
Do you think, Isabella, that muffs will ever come back in fashion?
I think that there is a lot of hilarity surrounding the term. And I believe that due to that, no.
I concur with you because I imagine it's quite difficult to use a smartphone when the smartphone and your hands are in the muff.
You could probably use it to carry your smartphone though. Although I just imagine people trying to sort of, you know, use the subway and stuff like that, all wearing a muff. It just doesn't, it just feels impractical. And again, the term would be a cause for hilarity and nobody's mature enough for that, to be honest. No.
So tell us what you, tell us what you found out about Victorian fashions or Edwardian fashions.
Basically, the cool thing about fashion at this time, especially with, for example, the Glasgow girls, which would have included Margaret MacDonald McIntosh, is that people like William Morris were encouraging the idea that embroidery and sewing skills were actually not a lesser art. Because before they, I'm saying this again in inverted commas, a lesser art, because it was seen as a woman's thing to do and not as technical, not as impressive. And then you've got people like Jessie Newbery, who's Frances Newbery's wife. She was quite big, I believe, in sort of sewing circles and making it more of a, showing that it was actually artistically incredibly important, difficult and skilled work. But also at this time, people were going, I feel like there's something wrong with corsets. I feel like there's a chance that corsets are damaging my insides and stuff. So in London, they set up a healthy and artistic dress union. So they were going, right, you want to teach people to dress sensibly, but this means no corsets, but it also means like don't be too crazy. But when you go to Glasgow, you've got people like the Glasgow girls and even MacIntosh with their big flouncy collars and the big loose bows. And it was a way of showing that you were an artist. It's a form of self-identification, self-expression and self-exploration. And most importantly, it was a huge reflection on the move towards gender equality.
Totally. So in my research, having a look at like turn of the century and keeping warm and fashion and things like that, I discovered a picture which I'm going to screen share with you, Isabella, and then we can put it up on the website. So you can have a guess at what it is.
Okay.
yeah. Isabella, oh my God. What do you think these are?
Is it a boot warmer?
It is a boot warmer. Yeah, boot warm, two boots. Yeah. So I'm just sharing a picture with Isabella now, which I say we'll put on the page details. It's two copper boots. It looks like two Wellington boots made out of copper. And they've got caps on and you fill them up with hot water. And then you slide them into your boots. And so it's like a boot hot water bottle.
That's amazing. I feel like it'd be so dangerous though. Like I'm looking at that and thinking of all the things that I would melt and burn if they were in my possession.
Absolutely. But I think what you need to perhaps factor in is that obviously they're quite expensive. So they would have been owned by, you know, some upper class person. And so they wouldn't be the ones getting burned. It would That's be the true. Poor manservant who was warming the boots with the hot water bottle booties. We've pretty much run out of time now. So thank you very much for listening, everybody, to our second episode. If you have any knowledge or information or photographs about 1903 fashions and how people kept warm, then feel free to share them with us on our socials or on the website page.
What are we talking about next time, Jodie?
I'm not sure what we're going to talk about next time. I've got a long list, Isabella. I also like to leave the wings of fate, the waves of fate, whatever fate has.
I've never heard of either of those expressions, so I'm pretty sure.
You know when fate wafts you a subject matter? The waftings of fate to see what they'll say. I mean, it's going to be
the hands of fate. It's the hands of fate.
The gloved hands of fate. So thank you very much. We will see you next time, but not see you. This is a podcast. And take care of each other.
Thank you.